we are back with an all-new Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III, and I'm dead and loving it.
Wow. I'm Louis Fertel, and I am not deathly sick, so I'm going to hold this podcast together using whatever it is I bring to the podcast and do it consistently. But Ira is basically near death, and what's happening here?
Yeah.
The coughing is very Tallulah Bankhead at the end of her life. I'm talking about she's had a few hundred thousand cigarettes at this point.
Okay. I am backstage at the milk train doesn't run here anymore.
We're seconds in this episode in Tennessee Williams so deep.
Which I did see, not with her, obviously. I saw it with Olympia Dukakis.
May she rest.
Yeah, yeah. So bad play, but she's great.
Right. Now, I'm sure she had a lot to do in that play.
Yeah.
This is, by the way, the last week I get to call myself just Emmy nominee. I'll soon be winner or loser.
Oh, we'll find out.
Yes. I want to give a shout out to Jeopardy that won Best Game Show over the weekend. I am wearing a Wheel of Fortune shirt today to prove that I'm verse. And then secondly, Ryan Seacrest is now hosting the show. He did his first episode the other day. And can I tell you something? Is there more of a machine in show business than Ryan Seacrest? I mean, we talk about like Taylor Swift or Beyonce being machine-like and their ability to keep producing stuff. Ryan Seacrest has never been incapable of doing what he, like, it's like he's been hosting for 100 years. It's such a weird quality to have that he feels so belonging to whatever environment he puts himself in work-wise. And by the way, he has 175 jobs still.
Yeah. I mean, he ate Brian Dunkelman in the womb.
And there was lots of frosted tips involved there. So it was a really coarse swallow.
That has to be one of the biggest fumbles ever, by the way. Can you imagine his contract negotiations between season one and season two and then the show just takes off.
Right. It's also one of those shows, though, where they did have like two or three too many moving parts at the time. Like something probably had to go, you know, to get to that really insightful analysis that Paula Abdul would bring every single performance.
Well, you know, speaking of American Idol, I have an essay about American Idol in my new book, which is finally coming out.
Woof.
After years of me talking about it.
As you know, I'm anti-book, so this is a tough moment for me. But yes, I'm excited to read it. What is the essay pertaining to? Is it about a specific idol?
Yeah, so I wrote about the episode where Jennifer Hudson goes home.
Oh, I mean, we were just talking about classic theater. The way Fantasia throws her head back and sobs.
Yeah.
Fully Medea level.
The way that Ryan Seacrest does the most diabolical thing ever and puts all the three black women in one group and then puts the others into another group and then asks, I believe, George Huff to join the group that he thinks is the top group of the
week.
What
the fuck?
And of course he goes over to the group where, you know, Fantasia and Jennifer Hudson are there. And then Ryan goes, I said the top group. And then the music and the dramatics. But no, I compare that to the other big election of 2004, which was George W. Bush or whatever. Remember him?
Not you getting into political analysis. Not you writing for Politico. I am just not sure about that.
Anyway, the book is now available for pre-order, and it's called Pure Innocent Fun. So go look it up on Amazon. It's on sale on Amazon or wherever you buy your books.
I'm going to say lots of other places besides Amazon. Just saying. That's all I'm saying.
I feel like one of the Pod Save boys now promoting a book.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that all they do
right
on their show? Promote books? Mm-hmm.
They're helping people or whatever. I think it's stupid.
Survivor next.
I'm going to say we're coming up on the advent of John Lovett on Survivor. And I have to tell you, when people come up to me and ask like, oh, do you know anything about how he did on Survivor? First of all, of course I don't. And second of all, I have no guess as to how this man did.
Yeah.
His brand of kind of sarcasm and casual droll intelligence or whatever, I don't really know how that plays on Survivor. Like, he would be an unusual person to win in that regard, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like they're more kind of diabolical, saucy personalities that land on top. But I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how it'll play. I feel like for his sake, he probably either wants to win or a somewhat early boot. Not that early, but I don't know. I feel like jury is probably better on Survivor than it is on Big Brother. Some people like don't want to make the jury. Because they're like, get me out of here.
In Big Brother, they put you in like this house that has just a couple of coloring books in it. And you have to sit in there for weeks and weeks. It is full prison. Like, and you have to wait until this episode where you are basically an inconsequential member of the TV show. And you vote one person to win ultimately. I will also say about John Lovett, I will be on Love It or Leave It. Are taping Love It or Leave It live this Thursday with some, I'm looking at my notes, up-and-coming actress named Jane Fonda. I don't know what this woman is performing, if she's good, if she has training, I have no idea. If she's related to anybody famous. And somebody, the other queen of cinema, Zachary Quinto, will be there. And Kumail Nanjiani, who guest-hosted Kimmel over the summer, he will be there too. And I want to say, for a straight man, nobody has looked more like gay porn than this man. This is the gay porniest looking man I have ever seen. The shoulder width alone.
You know what? He really did do a whole transformation post-Marvel.
No, the Eternals? The Eternal is areola-sized because his pecs are huge.
You know what? We got a few good things out of the Eternals. Not the movie.
Right, no.
But there was Gemma Chan, Kit Harington, just two beautiful people in a movie being beautiful. Not much else going on.
Which is what we request of them. Thank you.
We got that. I don't know who else. Oh, Angelina Jolie is in the movie, of course.
That's a problem. When Angelina Jolie comes up fourth when describing a movie, that's where you know you went wrong. That's when Chloe Zhao should have taken a look inward.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, the rumors that Maria might be bad seem to be going away. People love
at least she seems qualified for a nomination, it seems like. Yeah.
They love her.
Which, love her back in an Oscars conversation.
Which is all we need.
Yes, that's very exciting.
Anything else happening?
Well, there were so many things happened since we were last on 2 weeks ago. We'll get into some of it. Remember that movie, The Deliverance?
Yeah.
I have a certain limited series that's going to be in my keep it this week. But otherwise, this episode, we're going to talk about Beetlejuice, which I saw and Ira didn't, because as you can hear, he has some sort of Grey's Anatomy level illness. Like Izzy is trying to have sex with him in the bed. That's how sick he is.
I'm Beetlejuice. I'm Beetlejuice now, actually. I'm dead.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll talk about that. And then also, James Earl Jones, one of the great actors in any medium, passed away this week. And we will talk about how fabulous he is. And also, we will talk about how he's kind of an honorary EGOT winner. He won an honorary Oscar, but won the other three awards cleanly. Pasek and Paul, the songwriters, are newly minted EGOT winners this week. So we'll break down maybe our favorite EGOT winners, who deserves an EGOT, which ones are kind of full of shit. Actually, it's going to get nasty. I'm so sorry. It's going to be so mean to some of these people. And then our guest today is the lusciously hilarious, effortlessly funny Miss Pat, who's back with a new season of the Miss Pat Show. She's going to be on tour. She'll tell you all the dates specifically. So bring a pencil and a pad. You're going to need to be writing these down.
I want to be described someday as lusciously hilarious.
The way it comes out of her mouth, it's like,
yeah,
it hits so hard for how casually she's delivering it. But anyway, that's Keep It this week until, of course, Ira passes away. So the episode could end early. We will be back after this.
So, Beetlejuice came out this weekend. Obviously, I was not going to go to the theater and infect people with whatever it is I have.
That does sound like an M. Night Shyamalan movie I would see, but go ahead.
Trap 2.
Yeah, right.
Which I still haven't seen the first Trap. I still haven't seen Trap.
I'm still getting over that M. Night Shyamalan just had his effing daughter play a pop star in the movie, and then it's styled around her song. It's so brazen. It's so brazen.
And yet, Francis Ford Coppola couldn't even accomplish that much in The Godfather 3.
No, right. But that pertains to Winona Ryder, who was supposed to take that role and then dropped out. And then Sophia got into it. Winona's coming up later with Beetlejuice. Get back on track. What's happening here?
So I did not see it. However, I am a big fan of the original Beetlejuice. And I guess this is you convincing me to see it or not see it. And I will say, though, speaking of the original Beetlejuice, Do you recall that Roger Ebert did not like this movie?
Nothing pleases me more than when one of those two gentlemen, and they are the bitchiest straight men who ever lived, like Trump is third, like they're one and two.
Details Magazine staff members, yeah. That's straight men who are bitches. Yes.
It always like thrills me to realize they hate something completely random, like Gene Siskel famously hating Silence of the Lambs, for example. It's just, what? It's so strange.
But Ebert hated it because he loved the story in the beginning, and then when they died, he didn't know it was a ghost story. And he said, I'm not interested in this. He thought it was just going to be a funny comedy about this couple trying to fix up this old house. He actually says in his review, I thought it was going to be like Money Pit.
That movie we need to keep watching and talking about. Isn't it weird, by the way, that the, speaking of Tom Hanks movies, that The Burbs is coming back with Kiki Palmer? It's such a strange choice from the past to bring back. But anyway, so Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I will say this. First of all, when it comes to like rebooting IP that's like this old, for me, almost automatically, the bar that's set is it cannot be any higher than a 2.5-star movie. Like, for example, watching Top Gun Maverick, I can't divorce myself from the movie machinery that is making this happen that feels ultimately kind of cynical. So I can't think of a movie like that that has risen above that for me. And I'm going to say the same thing about Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. That said, it is a full 2.5 stars to me, and I will tell you why. First of all, you get a lot of Winona Ryder in this movie. Now, if you've listened a lot to Keep It, I actually have been kind of a doubter of hers. I love her and Heathers, even though I don't love that movie. I think she's fine in The Age of Innocence. I think other people kind of could have played that part for which she was nominated for an Oscar. But in this movie, she really brings her signature blend of, one, the cynicism that we associate with Lydia Dietz that she played in the original, and two, that Winona Ryder thing of she seems confounded by literally everything. Like everything sort of is hitting her in pinpricks and needles all the time, and she's a little bit perturbed and strange. She, to me, is downright lovable in this movie. It is a great return to form for her. And I have to say also about her, she's been giving so many interviews recently. This is one of the most hardcore movie lovers of any major star we have. Like, this is somebody who should be hosting her own TCM channel. I saw her rhapsodizing about Barbara Stanwyck recently. She's one of the few people who really nailed that Letterboxd 4 favorite movies thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Which, whenever I see, like, somebody we really care about step up to the mic for this thing, I absolutely brace myself. Because let me just say something. Amy Adams, baby, you are on notice. This woman comes to the mic, and she says two of her favorite movies are The Shawshank Redemption and Forrest Gump. Ma'am, are you a 9-year-old boy? What happened? And like these people, okay, again, some people don't like ranking things. You know, it's like a kind of frame of mind about movies that some people don't have. You cannot, it just can't be The Shawshank Redemption anymore. It can't be anything that played on TBS 175 times a day. And then also she said St. Elmo's Fire. That movie blows.
Yeah, it's a really bad movie.
Maybe she's a Mayor Winningham fan, in which case, all right, now I'm crossing the aisle. Now we're friends. Nothing else in that movie is that good, though.
You know, I really appreciated Winona Ryder's Letterboxd and Jenna Ortega's as well.
Jesus Christ, Jenna Ortega's like a freak. I had no idea she cared about movies this much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Specifically gave an interview Winona did where she talked about how she's worked with people who don't even watch movies. She's clearly talking about Millie Bobby Brown. And how much she loved Jenna Ortega just talking about movies with her. And I also loved seeing them on the red carpet. Like, Jenna seemed to really take on a sort of protector role of Winona, like dealing with the press and things like that. There's this lovely clip where the people are screaming at Winona, like a photo without the sunglasses, without the sunglasses. And then you see Jenna lean in and tell her, you don't have to do that.
Fuck yeah. No, I mean, Jenna does seem like a hardened pro. Like, I'll tell you how to treat these fucking animals or whatever.
Yeah. And also, everything she said about quote unquote writing for Wednesday seems to be fucking true, because she gave an interview about how Tim Burton was coming to her, asking her for story ideas for season 2, et cetera, and then handed her the Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice script and said, I want you in this. So it seems like he at least covets her opinion.
Also, I was heartened to hear that in Winona, in doing an interview about her entire career, and she revisited the original Beetlejuice, talked about how she loved working in that movie because she felt like an actual collaborator. Mm. So it sounds to me like Tim Burton just values the opinion of his actors in a really interesting way. I want to also say about Roger Ebert, he did end up loving his movie Ed Wood, which I think is probably still the best Tim Burton movie, if people haven't seen that yet, with Johnny Depp as the world's worst director, Ed Wood, and Martin Landau playing Bela Lugosi to an Oscar win. I also fucking love Sarah Jessica Parker in that movie and Patricia Arquette. Moving on.
Also, isn't it so weird, Jenna Ortega being this big movie buff and then the current Scream movie sort of being what they are?
Yeah, I also don't feel like, I'm not positive we're using Jenna Ortega correctly.
We're not.
She's supposed to be like this, have this cynical edge to her all the time. I'm like, are we sure she just doesn't have dark hair? Like, it's like we're putting this personality on here that I don't think is really true to her. I don't know. But anyway, I will say there's a lot of setup for this movie. But once it gets into the groove and you're in the world of the kookiness and you've got a stitched up Monica Bellucci walking around. By the way, that's a relationship we're not talking about enough. Tim Burton and Monica Bellucci. I'm enjoying, you know, I mean, she's Helena Bonham Carter shaped. It makes sense. Those two. And then I really liked, there's this moment in the movie where Jenna Ortega is taken in by this boy character who, of course, turns out to be, I'm sorry, this is a spoiler, a dead person. And he can't leave his treehouse. Same rules as in the original Beetlejuice. He is the grandson of the actor Tom Conti, who is an Oscar nominee for a movie called Reuben Reuben in the 80s. So a surprising Nepo baby, but also at least you made it interesting. Elsewhere in Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, there are some references in this movie that are so Animaniacs level strange and goofy and like things that like Gen Z wouldn't know about. I loved how squarely aimed at Gen X it was. This is a bit of a spoiler, but there's a mode of transportation where the dead ride and they call it the Soul Train. And all the people getting onto it are like Soul Train dancers. Like they're literally dancing and like, you know, like Jody Watley, like going down the Soul Train.
Rosie Perez?
Rosie Perez, the very same. The music is really good. So I'm giving it as full a recommendation as I can for something that does feel like a machine spat it out and AI handed it to you.
You know, Tim Burton had an interview where he said that it feels like he had lost himself a bit and now he's finally gotten back to who he was with this film. Would you say you're noticing a bit more of the Tim Burton juice coming back?
Yes. Well, the movie does make me laugh several times, too. Beetlejuice himself, Michael Keaton, nailing the line deliveries in a way where it feels like no time has passed. And I mean, because of the makeup on this character, it's like you're still watching the 1988 Michael Keaton. Like he's still as spry and like the movements are the same as jolty and strange. And, you know, he makes the movie what it is. That said, not quite enough Beetlejuice. And I know that in the original movie, it's not like he dominates the movie. You know, he appears when he appears and then, you know, the other characters take over. Would have liked a little bit more of him, ultimately, I think.
Yeah. I think Michael Keaton specifically wanted there to be less of him because he didn't want Beetlejuice to overtake the movie. But I don't know. I feel like Michael Keaton is having such a great moment in his career that I really didn't know how much I loved him until recently. And it's from fun, goofy roles, too, that you think wouldn't be great. But even when he appeared in, say, Spider-Man as the Vulture, right? You know, this sort of pathos that he brought to a character like that. And it, you know, it relies on the fact that, you know, he was in Batman before and that, you know, he did Birdman, etc. So I don't know. He takes really good roles lately.
I also feel like over the past few years, like, this admiration is kicked up for him where he could win like a Kennedy Center Honors or something. Like there's this agreed upon feeling that he is essential to show business and he has done anything and everything. I mean, this is the man who starred in like Multiplicity and Batman, etc. You know what was a good movie? That McDonald's movie, The Founder. That was good. Underrated movie that didn't go anywhere that Oscar season.
Also, he's fantastic in Jackie Brown.
Of course. I mean, actually, when people don't pick Jackie Brown as their favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, I have to ask why. It just, to me, has everything in a way that isn't contrived.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino, I'm not used to his tricks by that point. And that point in his career, it's thrilling. It's peak thrilling Tarantino for me. Also, Justin Theroux plays a part that I almost worried was too over the top. He does get a lot of laughs at me by the end. And then also, Willem Dafoe plays a certain zany comic role to the hilt. That said, can someone please pick up this man from Nightmare Alley? He's been there for 5 years now. I'm telling you, it's still Poor Things. It's still one of my eyes is popping out of its socket and the other one is shooting a gun. Like everything about him is still kooky House of Waxy. And I would like him to return a little bit to the solemn awards circuit where he belongs. And I'm talking about playing Vincent Van Gogh or The Platoon or whatever. I need a little bit more of that Willem Dafoe, Lighthouse Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, I would say also, It's funny you brought up Justin Theroux because I was rewatching for some reason Big Brother 14.
I'm remembering what's
fantastic.
Is that
season.
Rachel Riley? No.
The coaches.
The coaches, yes.
No, it's the coaches.
Yeah. Oh, Ian Terry. Ian Terry. Yes, yes.
Ian Terry winning. And at one point, Julie asked them about things that have happened in the real world and whether they're true or false. And one of the questions was, who got engaged this week? Was it Jennifer Aniston or Jennifer Lopez?
Ooh, I didn't realize they played like Us Weekly style games with the contestants, or I had forgotten they did once upon a time.
I think they do less of that now, but they really used to do that shit where it was, oh, people care about these things. And they would ask about the Super Bowl, etc. But it was Jennifer Aniston just getting engaged to Justin Theroux.
Oh my God, simpler times. I did enjoy them together. Also, he's quite talented. He wrote Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, no.
When people have a script in their belt, that's always strange. You know, like, what's his name? Glenn Powell's one of those now, you know?
Yeah, and also the black Channing Tatum, the one from Prison Break.
Oh, you're talking about Wentworth Miller.
Yes, because he wrote Stoker.
Which is crazy. What?
Yeah.
People contain multitudes. Consult Walt Whitman on this. This is what he thinks.
But then when they do that, I'm always like, was that the only script you had in you and we're grateful that that's all you want to put out there? Or is there something else percolating and no one's just asked you for it?
No, I keep thinking about when we had Danai Gurira on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a Tony-nominated playwright, I believe.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I wasn't getting the roles I wanted for myself, so I had to write something. And I assume that's why a large swath of actors write. You know, they're not getting cast, and so they think, well, this is an interesting way to put me.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds. And Blake Lively.
Nobody's casting Blake Lively. They're too scared. Too big of a risk.
Let me tell you that that girl is very lucky. A Simple Favor 2 is coming out next year.
Right. Which I assume people never get people back into her favor, if you know what I'm saying.
All right. When we're back, we're joined by Miss Pat.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
Saving money on your next project with help from Menards. Be prepared for flooding and keep your basement dry with Barracuda Pumps. Barracuda makes high-quality pumps that offer dependable performance for when you need it most. Save big money on all Barracuda Pumps now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
This week's guest always has something wild to say and a lot of places to say it. From her stand-up tour to her podcast, The Pat Down, to her BET Plus originals, wherever there's a mess to be made, she's going to be there, and we're all the better for it. So please welcome to the show, star of the Emmy-nominated series, The Miss Pat Show. It's Miss Pat.
Hey, thank y'all for having
me. Thank you for being here.
Oh my God. When I heard you were going to be on this show, I said, thank God. Just let the funny woman be funny at us, please. You were just on Jimmy Kimmel recently, where you were a fabulous talk show guest. And I just want to ask in general, do you really embrace like being on a talk show? Like when you hear you're going to be on something like that, do you think, oh, this is like my chance to do exactly what I'm put on earth to do? Like, because you seem so attuned to what an audience needs to be hearing when you're sitting in chairs like that.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, a lot of people are like, oh my God, I'm going to be on Jimmy Kimmel. I just look at everybody as they shop at Walmart, and if you don't shop there, you go there to steal. So everybody is on one level. So I think that's what make me go out and just be who I am. And no matter who's sitting there, if it's Obama, Jimmy Kimmel, Michael Jackson, everybody shop at Walmart. So everybody's on the same playing level. So I just go out and be me.
I'm now picturing Michael Jackson at Walmart. What is he getting? Is he buying his band leader uniform epaulettes there? What could he possibly buy?
Do you have monkey food?
Yeah, right.
Well, aside from even just being a great guest, you're a great host. And I want to ask you, before we get to the Emmy-nominated series, I want to talk about Miss Pat Settles It, which is so funny. It's you as a judge on BT Plus, and there's a panel of comedians, which is a great, you know, twist on the format of just, you know, Judge Joe Brown or Judge Judy just being the only person yelling at the crazy people who come in. And you had a clip go viral recently with these two people going at it over, I was explaining to Lewis, someone was coming in and they were expecting a Kelly Rowland look from somebody.
Yes.
And what we saw was not Kelly Rowland.
And I want people to understand, I don't see these cases before they present it to me. I always told them I do not want to see the cases because I want the reaction to be authentic. So when y'all saw that Kelly Rowland, I don't know what the hell she looked like, to be honest with you. I was so blown away, but it was not Kelly Rowland. I was just as shocked as my jury, and it was hilarious. It actually got 10 million views on my page.
Oh, well, damn.
And it's still going. People cannot be, you know, people are like, where's this show? I never heard of this show. And that's why I brought in comedians and family members, because I wanted to put a twist on a judge show. I tell people, I'm a convicted felon. I'm not a judge. I have a GED. I just wanted to put a twist on a judge show. Steve Harvey is not a judge. He's a comedian, but a great host. He does his way, and I do mine my way. And I just wanted to put more comedy into mine.
Okay, you have such a distinct past. You just said you're a convicted felon. You have this memoir, Rabbit, where you talk about selling drugs under that name. What other comedians do you actually relate to? Are there people in the business who you think, oh, that's my obvious colleague or compatriot, because you're such a one-of-a-kind story?
I relate a lot to Ali Sadiq, because he's been to prison for drugs too. So I guess a lot of stuff that when he's talking, he's one of my favorite comedians right now. I can really relate to him because we kind of have a similar background.
Yeah, and I think that what I really love too about your collaborations is that we had Jordan Cooper on here before. And yes, I mean, love Jordan. And him working on the Miss Pat show with you, how did that even come about? And how did you, you know, manage to just sort of meld your perfect sort of brains of comedy together, you know, because you have a very distinct voice and he has such a distinct voice too. And it comes together beautifully on the show.
Well, Jordan was the third writer for the Miss Pat. It wasn't even called the Miss Pat Show. Matter of fact, He named it the Miss Pat Show. It was always untitled show for Miss Pat. And so when he came along, he said, we should name the show after you. And he was young, straight out of college. He was still in college, getting ready to graduate. And, I went out on my birthday, I'll never forget it, and Lee Daniels told me to go out and meet Jordan. He think he could write the show. At this time, in Hollywood, you don't get three opportunities for the same show. That show had three writers. So, I mean, it had to be God, because it's almost like I was waiting for Jordan to grow up, because I spent like a year and a half with one writer, then a year with another writer. And so I was waiting. It was like I was waiting for him to grow up. And then when Lee introduced me to him and I fly out to see his play, and I called Lee and I was like, this boy been here before. I think he can do it. And both of us knew to Hollywood. And I had been there a little longer than him. And I just told him, and I said, you know, one thing you had to do is you have to listen to me. I said, everybody's going to lie to you. I said, these people do not eat their food. They take you to lunch and they go to the bathroom and throw it up. I said, they all liars. I'm probably the only person that swallow their food.
Good trait to have in this town. We need one of you. Yeah.
And I just told him, I said, when we took it over to Fox and you know, Ron Howard Company, Imagine is also a partner on the Miss Pat Show. So They didn't want him. He was too young. He had never written a TV show. And I just told him, I said, if you listen to me, we can get this show made. And so we went behind everybody back and we kept it to ourselves. And he wrote the pilot for the Miss Pat show. It took us about a week and a half. We was up all day, all night, just rewrite. And I took it to Lee Daniels. And one of the biggest things, what I love about Jordan is because he trusted me when I asked him to take his name off the pilot. And that's some serious shit in Hollywood. I could have stole it and say, you didn't write anything. He didn't have any representation at the time. And I said, one thing you would never have to worry about me doing is lying and stealing, because I undone all of that when I was younger. So I took his name off of it. And the reason why I took his name off of it, y'all, because if they didn't like it, you know, he was in the midst of trying to get the job. It wouldn't say, well, we already know you can't write. It would have fell back on me. I'm the star. They trying to get me out there. So they care about me, but they didn't really care about him at the time. And so he took his name off of it, and I gave it to Lee Daniels, and Lee Daniels read it. He was like, who wrote this? And I was like, me. He's like, you're lying. He took it over to Imagine, and they gave him the job to write the pilot.
That is phenomenal. Also, okay, you've brought up the name Lee Daniels. First of all, just talk about your relationship with him in general, because he's been on my mind recently because he's been giving phenomenal interviews regarding the movie The Deliverance. And have you seen this movie, and what did you think?
I did not see that movie because my husband watched it. Everybody said it was good. I don't do scary movies. I don't even do a little bit of scary movies. I'm scared as hell. And so when they was talking about demons, I said, nah, I'm going to let y'all have that. Now, I peeked in on some parts. And from what I saw, it was pretty good. But sit down, I can't watch that. That'll scare the shit out of me.
And talk about your relationship with Lee Daniels just in general. He's like a fascinating showbiz figure. His quotes recently about putting Empire together were staggering.
Well, I met him during the first season of Empire. I lived in Indiana at the time. And this young dude named John Rattler, who works for Imagine, at the time, I think he was a producer or something like that for him. And so it was his job to go out and find shows. And he found me on Joe Rogan podcast and took me to Lee Daniels. And Lee Daniels, we had a conversation and Lee Daniels said, okay, I'll do it. He was moving into TV and he wanted to give a black woman a TV show. And so I was just happened to be that black woman at the time. And he found Jordan after the third writer. And, you know, what I love about Lee Daniels is like he said, it was like me and Jordan, his kid, who had never been to Hollywood. And he said, this is y'all project. Develop it. I'm just a parent if you need me to go whoop somebody's ass. So there were times, like, if I needed something, we couldn't get the ball moving, we would call Lee Daniels. They would get that ball moving. He would get that ball moving for us. And so, you know, we just finished the fourth season, which is our biggest season. You know, knock on wood, hopefully season five is coming along. And, you know, we're still together after five seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really funny, really inventive show. I love that this classic sitcom episode that you did without the swearing in it, that one. That one cracked me up a lot. And congratulations on the Emmy nomination.
Thank you. Never went into this thinking that this show would be nominated for an Emmy. Not because it wasn't a good show. It was mainly because BET Plus was such a new app when we got there. It was a year old. I think it's going into its fifth year now. And it had less than a million subscribers. And I remember Jordan telling us, you know, we're going to die over here. I said, no, we don't. No, we're not. I said, one thing I know about life, you only got to create two things. If you create these two things, or if you mimic these two things, then you got a hit. And that's crack and Waffle House. They never had a commercial, but they still going strong after all of this time. You ain't never seen a Waffle House commercial, and I ain't never seen a crack commercial. Miss Patchell is cracking Waffle House. It's undeniable. And we've been over there now hopefully we're going into our fifth season. And, you know, I'm just grateful for BET Plus for pulling the Miss Pat show out of the Disney vault, because Hulu shot the pilot and said it pretty much wasn't good enough. And they put it on the shelf, and BET Plus went in there and got it. And not only did they go in there and get it, they allowed us to be black. They allowed me to tell a story about a mother that most networks will never touch. I'm not the first black mama to say, set your black ass down. The problem is Hollywood never allowed you to see that. Cookie on Empire was the closest you got to that.
Totally. Also, I want to say in this show that there's like a live studio audience, which is like a utterly dead behavior in TV comedy. I'm so thrilled about that. Do you have a favorite multicam sitcom in history that has that feel with that audience?
It would probably be, you know, one of my favorite shows. I don't even know if it was multicam. I think it was Leave It to Beaver.
Amazing answer.
Okay.
Barbara Billingsley, yes.
I loved Leave It to Beaver, and I used to watch every episode on Nick at Night.
Yes, and she was like the perfect little mom. My mom would be in the background, set your black ass down. She'd be like, what do you need today, Beaver? And I'm like, his mama sipping tea. My mama drinking out of a quart bottle. And I was like, oh, I wish this lady was my mama.
She also has one of the greatest necks in TV history, I think. Just like the posture that would come into the room and, you know, put Wally in his place.
I wonder, did they make love in them pearls? Because they never came off her neck.
No, she was born in those. I'm almost certain.
And who was the, why am I blanking on his name? It's the sickness. The best friend, Eddie Haskell.
Yes.
Eddie Haskell.
One of the great characters. Yes.
The neighbor kid who, like, that is just very classic, you know, white Americana too. You know, the neighbor kid who comes over and you're like, because I feel like my mom would have known Eddie Haskell was up to no good.
Yes. Well, black mamas know, like, get that.
Right, they would have known.
That we can smell it. I was telling my son, he brought a girl home one time and I told my son, look, son, she's a whore. She's like, no, she's not. So she's a hoe, son. I can smell the hoenism on her. And after they broke up, he was like, Mom, don't you know I see her in the strip club? I said, didn't I tell you she was a hoe? Well, black parents also did not allow your friends to come into their house.
Mm. Yeah. Also, if you start on a show called Ho Detective, where people just walked in and then you had to tell us in like a game showy fashion whether or not they were a hoe, I think that would sell. I'm just saying.
Well, I have a nose for a hoe.
Which, by the way, speaking of that, and I'm wearing a Wheel of Fortune shirt right now, I was shocked and pleased to hear you say that you want to host a game show. And what kind of game show are we talking about here? This is something I am very obsessed with. I'm obsessed with game shows in the world. I think they're the most compulsively watchable TV we have.
I would love to host something in the dating scene. Marriage. I've been married for now 31 years. You know, something like Newlywed Game. What a twist on it. Because marriage ain't what it used to be. Back in the day, it was just a man and a woman. It's everybody now. So it would be so colorful and so beautiful to hear, you know, just not the bored man and woman relationship anymore. The woman got to cook. We don't cook anymore. So I would love to see, I would love to see relationships talk to America about how things have changed.
No, completely. I mean, I think Lewis has been watching this too, but I've been rewatching Supermarket Sweep. And while I've been sick, there's a channel on Amazon Prime that just has it on all day. So I've been watching it. And the 90s episodes are just, it's so funny what David Ruprecht, the host, is asking them, like, what do you do? And like the mom, they're very much like, well, I'm a full-time mom, two kids at home. And it's like, that's the response for everybody. It's unless they're in school or something, but it is very rare that any of the women on the show have a job that's outside of the home.
It's just gender roles.
It's just specific gender roles for these men and women on the show.
Nobody follows gender roles anymore. So that's why it's so interesting. You know, it would be awesome to just see people in different elements in marriages now.
Also, Newlywed Game will always come in. Like, there's always a time for that to come back. We've had the versions with Carney Wilson and Sherry Shepherd and stuff. So your time will come.
Yes, yes. Put it out there. My time will come. But with real questions, not that bullshit. And so, do his feet stink? I don't want to hear shit about his feet. I want to hear something about his side hole. Do he have a side hole?
What's her phone number? Yeah, right.
And are you a step in this side hole? And why?
So what we need is the Newlywed Game, but it's only with couples who there's been an affair.
No, yes. It's like, it doesn't matter. You can, I don't even, what is it, polyzillus? I don't know what it is when a man got 4 or 5 women. I don't know what the fuck it's called. I call it, it's a damn, you're a damn fool. It ain't enough dick for all of us. That's what I call it.
Okay, so you are also, amongst the many things that you are doing currently, you're also embarking on a new tour.
Yes, Hot and Flashy.
Yes. Okay. Tell us a bit about what is it that you get out of touring so much that like you really enjoy? Is that your favorite part of your career?
I love touring because I love going to the different places and I love dealing with, you know, like if you go, like I just left Huntsville, Alabama. Country is a fucker. You hear me? They out there in their white linen suits with their Easter shoes on. And it's just good to go back and look at just people from, you know, from different parts of the world. And I always tell people, comedy is how I got here. And it's the one thing that I own along with the Pat Down podcast. I don't own the Miss Pat show. I don't own Miss Pat Settles. You create these things. I'm not Tyler Perry. Tyler Perry about the only black person I know that own any damn thing that he did. You know, but I'm not there yet. So it's the one thing I have control over. And I love having control over what I do. So I'm going to keep the stand-up because the stand-up is how I got where I'm at today.
Do you have any cities you visited on tour that you found surprisingly charming that you have specific good memories of dealing with the audience?
Vermont.
Oh, how very the Bob Newhart show or Newhart, yeah. Pardon me. What's happening there?
It almost felt like a TV show. Everybody was so nice and so pleasant. It wasn't a lot of fast food restaurant near the club I played. Everything was homegrown and the restaurant bought their food from local farmers. It was like some TV shit. I was like, it's so, you almost felt like I was in Canada. It was so peaceful.
Yeah, we don't have like peace around here. So that's really crazy that you found some in the actual 50 states.
Yeah, Vermont was really nice. I even told my husband, I was like, and it's beautiful. I was like, I should take you to Vermont and we just go for a weekend.
Very scenic, yes.
Scenic.
Bernie Sanders country, yes.
Oh, no wonder I like it.
And where are you going out on the tour this time?
I'll be going to Denver, Charleston, South Carolina, Birmingham, Alabama, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, Tampa, Buffalo, Town Hall in New York City. And that is not the courthouse, okay? Milwaukee, St. Louis, Pennsylvania, and Richmond, Virginia. So y'all come on and make sure y'all go to MissPatComedy.com and get your tickets before I lose weight and you won't be able to identify me.
Okay, that's a threat. That's a threat.
Miss Pat, thank you so much for being here.
God, you were so much fun. I knew you'd be this funny. I knew.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Are you concerned about microplastics in your home? Blue Land makes it easy to make sustainable choices. Blue Land cleaning sprays, toilet bowl cleaner, and dishwasher and laundry detergent tablets are free from dyes, parabens, and harsh chemicals. Blue Land is a certified B Corp and Leaping Bunny cruelty-free certified. Their formulas are EPA Safer Choice certified, and many products have also earned Cradle to Cradle's Gold Material Health Certificate. Get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/crooked. blueland.com/crooked.
On Monday, news broke that beloved and revered actor James Earl Jones has died at the age of 93. During his lifetime, James won 3 Tonys, 2 Primetime Emmys, a Grammy, and an honorary Oscar, making him one of the handful of people to earn an EGOT with an asterisk. A club that's only gotten bigger just this past week because Pasek and Paul, the La La Land writers, the Dear Evan Hansen writers, scored an Emmy for a song from Only Murders in the Building, which is both a kind of cute musical theater song and also, if you ask me, fucking annoying, which I believe was the point of the song. But lyrically, I think it's qualified alone. And it has like a nice, fun cadence that it's appropriate for that season of Only Murders in the Building.
I told Benj once that my favorite work of his was from La La Crocodile.
From the Shawn Mendes cinematic canon, I remember.
Yes, yes. I don't know if I actually meant it, but I think I meant it in the moment. I said it to annoy him. I said it to annoy him because he made fun of the outfit that I wore to a Tony's party. He said, "You're a little casual." And I said, "All right, we can talk about La La Crocodile if you want."
Also, I have to say, I know that only one of them is gay, and it's Benj, right?
Yes.
Here's the thing. When they take pictures, you think it's the other one. That's not true. It's Benj Pasek. I also have already called him an EGOT with 2 T's because he's Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony, and Tinder, where I have seen him routinely. So we need that representation. Good for him, etc. Okay, before we get into EGOTs, let's circle back to James Earl Jones. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Icon.
Oh, please. Vocally alone. If he said hello to you from 3 rooms down, you would know it was him. And you would be able to identify all the roles by which he is associated, from everything from Darth Vader to The Lion King to being the voice of CNN. Talk about gravitas. If you haven't seen the movie The Great White Hope, which is from 1970, which is inspired by the story of the boxer Jack Johnson, it takes place around World War I. And it's inspired by his story as he became a celebrity, was with a white woman who was played by Jane Alexander in the movie. And it's basically about the tumult that causes, how it gets him thrown in jail, how he has to eventually throw a boxing match that his prison sentence might be lessened. It's very confusing in the abstract. This man, I mean, like, he opens his mouth and you just think, put him in Shakespeare now. Like, this man could not be anywhere but the stage and movies, and the conviction he brings to this movie is unbelievable. It is a very bracing and bleak movie, and I really think everybody should see it. By the way, it's 100 minutes. It's so well done. Yeah. And Jane Alexander is such an underrated fucking actress. I've brought up this movie before. She was later nominated for an Oscar for a movie called Testament, which takes place in a suburb, and it's about if the nuclear apocalypse happened, the 3 days later, like what happens, and as people slowly start dying, etc. You'd be surprised how much this movie reminds you of COVID, is all I'm saying. But she's a fabulous actress. She was eventually the head of the National Endowment for the Arts in the 90s. But James Earl Jones, a second to none actor. I was watching this movie and thinking, this could be nobody else but him. There was no second place for this role. He's like a genre of acting unto himself.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it was a bit of method acting as well, you know, because he was married to a white woman in real life. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about them videos that came out this week. Let's just say that certain black straight men from the civil rights era viewed marrying white women as sort of, you know, liberation and civil rights movement, and they did not have a lot of nice things to say about black women. Very much like when Eartha Kitt said that Harry Belafonte was like, they never dated because he said, a black woman can never do anything for me.
Harry Belafonte said that into a microphone?
To her!
What?
To Eartha Kitt!
Deo,
no, he
bitch!
Said it to Eartha Kitt. She recounted it. She recounted the story about why she hated him.
Oh, God. Well, also, let's talk about quotable people. Eartha Kitt, look that up. She had a lot to say.
Yes, but there was that, and there were some recent old interviews, some from, I believe, the 70s, and then some even later in life, you know, where he just specifically talks about how black women and anger, and I don't know, he had a lot going on. But he was a great actor.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. He just didn't love the sisters. Unless he's playing opposite them in Claudine.
Love that movie. Oh my God, it's been a minute.
Great movie. Great fucking movie.
Diane Carroll, 1974. Yeah. Yes.
That's a classic. I think we talked about that when Diane Carroll died. But if you haven't seen that, see it. I've long wanted to remake the film Soul Man, which he is in.
Oh, Soul Man. My God. A thrill. It's been a minute. It's been a minute. Yes. Anyway, moving on now to EGOTs and what's happening with them. It does feel like we're verging on having too many EGOT winners at this point.
Yeah. A lot of fake EGOTs.
Yeah. And I don't mean that as shade to the people who are getting them. It's just, I think the reason we revered it and became this sort of cultural institution is because there were like 15 of them. And now when it's moving into, we're getting into like 30 something, I don't know. I get a little worried. But this to me is a very legitimate EGOT win because these are people who have written, it's not just that they did one project that trickled into five other, you know, it's not like when you do an Oscar winning project and then somehow that same project becomes a Tony winning musical and that somehow becomes an Emmy winning something. I mean, La La Land, Dear Evan Hansen, Only Murders in the Building have nothing to do with each other. So that is fabulous that they've scored on all those fronts.
Wow, they're all rousing.
Rib ticklers. Yes.
Yeah, there are a lot of fake EGOTs out there. I think that you and I have said before that we only support competitive EGOTs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I can't. I mean, I'm sorry, Barbara Streisand, you're not an EGOT. That's just the way of the world. You lost the two Tonys. That's it.
Whoopi.
Whoopi is an interesting situation because she has the daytime Emmy for The View. And then she produced a Tony-winning musical, Thoroughly Modern Millie.
That's my girl.
Yeah, right.
Millie Dilmound is my girl.
Are you talking specifically Sutton Foster or Original Recipe Mary Tyler Moore in the movie?
Well, I'm not talking about Mary, okay. Even though I love her. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, nobody throws a hat like my sis.
Right, you're from Wisconsin, but Minneapolis counts as your neighbor. Okay, yes.
My good sis, Mary Tyler Moore. But no, I mean, Sutton Foster is spectacular in that musical. I think it actually is my favorite musical.
Interesting.
I listen to it constantly. And I would love a revival. There's a bunch of racist shit in it against Asian people. So I don't know if we'll ever see that. Although there was supposed to be a City Center revival right before COVID hit starring Ashley Park.
Ooh.
And it was supposed to, I think, you know, fix a lot of the racist stuff in it. And with an Asian lead, obviously.
Right, right.
But I don't know. I just was thinking about Thoroughly Modern Millie because Rachel Zegler just did a fantastic performance of Gimme Gimme at some live show somewhere. It was just online.
Oh, I just saw that too. And I almost didn't even know it was her she was giving so much. Not that she's not an unimportant actress or whatever, but she's particularly giving in this performance. Now, here's the thing. Elton John also just got an EGOT recently, and yet I am fucking dead pissed at this man right now. Do you know why?
No. Did he cancel a show?
No, he still is giving farewell tours. So don't even begin to pretend he's canceling shows. Second of all, no. Somebody asked him what he thought of Donald Trump invoking the name Rocket Man to describe Kim Jong-un. And he said, oh, I thought it was so funny. Donald's been a fan of mine for years. It was the most brain dead thing I've ever heard him say. I do not think of Elton John as stupid. It felt really not just tone deaf, like what planet are you on? What rocket are you riding?
He's cheeky.
You think he was being cheeky?
He's cheeky.
Yeah.
Probably. Maybe he was being cheeky.
I hope that's the case. Again, it was a very edited down clip. Like it was just whatever, the 20 seconds of him answering the question. So if there was something else said, I totally missed it.
Wow. Speaking of non-competitive EGOTs, Harry Belafonte has one.
Right. He's basically a liar. Non-competitive EGOTs, they're liars. They're just like, don't trust them.
An EGOT can do nothing for him.
Quincy Jones, somehow a non-competitive. I guess he never did win the Oscar. I mean, honorarily. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's tough for me, too. Viola Davis, a great EGOT winner. Even though two of them are Fences, she has the Oscar for Fences. She also, though, has the Tony for King Hedley II. Mm. So I like the symmetry of, actually did two different August Wilson things. Another EGOT I have to be a little bit shady about. Audrey Hepburn. Mm. The last thing she got an Emmy for, that was the last award she got, was her walking through some fucking gardens or something and telling you to look at flowers, and that became an Emmy-winning thing for her? Absolutely not, bitch. Your brain was on a Roman holiday when you got an award for that. Absolutely not.
Gardens of the World with Audrey Hepburn.
She said, look at a hydrangea. Isn't it pretty? Emmy for me.
You know, I would say also... Now, this is my girl.
Yeah. Oh, here comes Miss Rita.
No, Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, Jennifer. Well, there's some problems here. Yeah. It's a little problematic.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, it should be in non-competitive. It's not in non-competitive on Wikipedia. Ma'am, she won her Tony for producing A Strange Loop.
Which I believe means you were on an email chain. I don't understand. You're telling me she was making decisions there? It's hundreds of people. Ira and I both know people casually, and I say this with love to them, because we actually do know these people who have Tonys, and they are frauds. I mean, I am just not getting any evidence that they did a fucking thing besides show up and throw 20 grand at it.
Yeah, I mean, I do know a lot of producers who are actually, you know, on the they're chasing pavements.
Yes.
Like Adele. Yeah. Okay, so they deserve it. But not everybody.
No.
Baby, not everybody. Also, I got a bone to pick with Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, go ahead.
Actually, more so a bone to pick with New Line Cinemas. Do you recall when I was writing a Christmas movie for Jennifer Hudson?
I sure do.
And then it never got made.
Right.
But now, it was supposed to be her first Christmas album because it was going to be the soundtrack for the movie. And now she has a Christmas album coming out in October. But you know what's not attached to it? A movie.
I believe Matt Rogers told me when he was maybe on her show or something that, because he was doing something Christmassy at the time. She said, oh, should I do a Christmas album? And should it be Red and Green Christmas or White Christmas? As if those are two different brands of Christmas you can put an album out. And I've never thought of it that way before. But that's so true. You know, one is sort of like Jingle Bells, chill.
Yeah.
And the other one is more like austere, snowy Christmas.
Yeah.
She really put a thought in my head with that one. I was going to say something shady about Rita Moreno. Now, I enjoy her. Her Emmy win is for a guest appearance on The Muppet Show. Now, that's probably one of the cooler, you know, guest appearances you can do. But you just squeaked in there, as far as I'm concerned. It's just like, because what's happening competitively in that category on any given year? Probably not that much.
It's not like she was up against Gaga's Muppet appearance.
Oh my God, remember that?
She should have won an Oscar for that one.
Yeah.
She was giving more than Jim Henson ever could have imagined would happen on The Muppet Show.
Speaking of Muppet-like theatrics and Lady Gaga, can you believe that this Joker movie apparently fucking sucks?
Yes.
I don't mean to say I like the first Joker at all, but I felt like all the ingredients going into this, that did not seem like a total possibility to me. We'll see what happens with her this Oscar season. Actually, I'm so sorry that I was shady to Rita Moreno. I really should have been shady to Helen motherfucking Hayes, the first lady of the American theater, and I'll tell you why. Her competitive Grammy, are you ready for this? She read an audiobook. It's called like Great American Documents. This woman literally read the Constitution and then got a Grammy for it. What? That's not a song, nor is it anything.
Seems like a lot of Americans should listen to it.
Why are you a character at a town hall meeting in 1950? Why are you in The Music Man?
You know what? Just a little tidbit for our listeners who are considering getting my book. I will be recording the audiobook.
Oh, good.
And I will be submitting myself for a Grammy.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait. God, I hope you're not up against anyone important. Jeremy Irons, this is your year to get that fucking audiobook Grammy. That's all I'm saying.
Judge Ketanji Brown, yeah. It's over, okay?
Oh, my God. I love coming for Ketanji Brown.
We have the same editor.
Oh, really? Oh, weird.
Her book just came out, and my editor is also doing Serena's memoir. And I'm like, you know, I could take them on.
And take them on what? Ketamine? What do you mean?
You know, my inspiration for my audiobook, by the way, will be very Mariah Carey's.
Oh, good.
Audiobook, okay?
Asides with runs?
Asides, just going off into things that aren't even in the print book. I mean, that is the top tier of audiobooks. Did she win for that?
No. She has enough Grammys, though. I'm not concerned about that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I think, in my opinion, the greatest EGOT winner of all, Mike Nichols. Such a diabolical force in the theater. And then in movies. And then, of course, the Angels in America. He knew no bounds. And everybody loved working with him, too. In fact, he was so beloved, he has to be gay. I don't care what Elaine May says.
You know what? I have not actually seen or listened to An Evening with Mike Nichols and Elaine May.
That would probably be a delightful listen. Yes, I love their old comedy bits. They really hold up on YouTube.
He is truly just one of my favorite directors.
Again, he's one of those Ang Lee people where none of these movies have anything in common other than amazing performances, and somehow you are the guiding force of everything between Working Girl and Silkwood and Wolf and Angels in America and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and The Graduate. I mean, there's just no carnal knowledge. None of these have anything to do with each other.
People with varying taste.
Couldn't be me. You know, it's game shows and, you know, gay men. That's it.
What's the Criterion closet for game shows? The Vanna's closet?
I was going to say, I think it's just my friend Mandel's house. Yeah, you can just, he'll pull down like an original like $5,000 wedge from Wheel of Fortune. You're like, oh, that's where it went.
Also, to close out EGOT, I will let you know that the G in EGOT stands for Grammy, and it does not stand for CMA Awards. So Beyonce not being nominated for a CMA Award, I'm pretty sure she expected that. Also, who gives a fuck about the CMAs?
They have not crossed my mind one time. And I am sorry to say this because I know he's like a beloved entertainer at this point. If you think Morgan Wallen is a more like important figure in music, what is wrong with you? That song with Post Malone, which I think is, by the way, a pretty good album, that Post Malone album.
Oh, it is good.
Yeah. That song, though, no dice, bitch. I think it sucks.
Also, somehow the song of the summer, thanks to my streams mostly. But
no, you're one of those. How are you this person?
I am.
Yes.
I had some help. That
bitch.
That chorus is rollicking, okay?
He didn't have enough help. Oh my God. Please get us 911.
I was toe tapping in the bathroom, okay? Got arrested at the airport.
Oh my God. Larry Craig reference. Wow. Deep. Take me back to Kathy Griffin, My Life on the D List.
Larry Craig happened a bit too early because right now he would probably be on like a reality show. Like he'd be on Traders or something.
Oh, yeah. Here's hoping. God, I know he had a lot to deliver the community. I'm not just talking about handies.
Anyway, yes, the CMAs mean nothing. The last time I cared about the CMAs was when Beyonce performed with the Chicks.
Yes.
Obviously. And I found out that the only black woman who's won a CMA is Tracy Chapman.
Oh, because of a song that was not country that she wrote 35 years before that Luke Combs picked up. And just, yes, exactly.
Fast Car. Luke Combs, a white country singer covering it, it won a CMA, and so she won a CMA because she wrote it.
Ugh.
Insane.
Now, I work in the market as a checkout girl, and I'm pissed. Sorry, that's my Fast Car reference for you.
All right, when we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. I'm almost done coughing in your ears. How many people have turned this episode
off? No, they said, wow, this is a gag being played on me or something. They don't even believe you're sick.
Lewis, what's your keep it?
My keep it is to something I really thought I was going to enjoy in a salacious way more than I did. The limited series, The Perfect Couple.
Yeah.
Nicole Kidman has only done this to me a couple times where she takes a really high profile project and I guess character and doesn't deliver something deeper and more interesting. I'm thinking, of course, about that Aquaman shit where she made me sit and watch. Girl, no.
Both of them?
It's like when Cate Blanchett made me see that Thor Ragnarok movie, and I'm still the most livid fag who ever lived.
Now, you didn't call her out about that.
Well, we only had limited time, and I needed her to like me. I think that's understood.
Yeah.
But on this show, okay, I understand that in the wake of White Lotus, we want to watch like bad people in expensive places or whatever. But I just thought it was a big round of somebody's notes about what they wanted to see in a TV show. Literally those two things. It's kind of star-studded cast. It wasn't about anything. This is a six-episode show, like 60 minutes apiece, where we're just waiting for the main character, Eve Houston, who seems miserable throughout the show, like getting around all these other characters to figure out who murdered Megan Fahey, who is, I think, maybe the best person on the show. If actually, I'll say this about Perfect Couple, affirmation of Megan Fahey's talents. Looking forward to more of her. But Nicole Kidman is this famous author who lives in Nantucket on this wonderful estate. I actually think she was miscast. I needed this character to be a bit pricklier than what she gave. Someone more like a Laurie Metcalf, somebody who you could see them being in charge of like a publishing enterprise, but then also an obvious dark side. I felt like Nicole didn't play the darkness dark enough. And by the way, as we know, this is a weirdo woman who can go there in any kind of movie. So I know she was capable of it. Watch To Die For again. We know how dark it gets. So I was just disappointed with this. Dakota Fanning, not bad on it, I guess. It's just, if it's going to be this pulpy and this much of an airport book, as it literally was, it's one of those books you buy at the airport, make it a movie. I just don't need it to be a limited series.
Yeah, I agree. I watched very little of it before I interviewed her.
Oh, but what did you think of her?
I mean, she's fantastic.
Yes.
That was such a fantastic interview. To be on a Zoom with Nicole Kidman in your Fire Island house.
Bizarro.
Is truly bizarro. Also, just a friend was sitting there working, and so he's hearing the entire interview, just mouth agape. And then another friend walked through the kitchen to get something. She was like, "Who's that? Have them come join us." And my friend was like, I cannot. And then he ran away.
I'm sure I brought this up on Keep It before. One time I went to a screening of that movie, Destroyer, and I heard she would be there for a Q&A. And then the lights came up and nobody was there. So I went to the lobby, like, upset. And she was just there waiting to hang out with people and speak to them. Excuse me?
Yes. That was her after the Boy Erased premiere, too. She's just chilling. She loves people.
Australians, what is it about them? Why are they so hopeful about the human race? It makes me suspicious.
Yeah.
Ira, what is your Keep It this week?
Okay, my Keep It this week goes to... I don't even know where to begin. But I have been watching The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives on Hulu.
What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
First of all, this show might save reality TV, Lewis.
What?
Yes. Okay, because I think that we had gotten to a point where, especially with Real Housewives or something, where we were sick of people just cravenly thirsting for attention but pretending that they're not, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is, you already know they're part of Mom Talk, which was this group of women in Salt Lake City who were dancing together on TikTok and talking about their lives and then had a soft swinging scandal. Soft swinging is everything but intercourse.
Help me, God. Okay. That really took me a beat. Go ahead.
So we already know that they are thirsty, you know? They want to be famous. And so, like, they're very blatant about it on this show. And so I think that that helps because these people are so wild. There's this woman, Taylor, who's sort of the ostensible lead, who in the first episode gets drunk, fights with her new boyfriend, and we cut to body cam footage of her being arrested. And then we cut to 11 months after Taylor's arrest. And then there's this woman, Whitney, who's just sort of like wicked. But I just want to say Keep It to the sad life that her husband, Connor Leavitt, is enduring on the show. He had a scandal where apparently he was on Tinder talking to other women. And I don't want to join the chorus of people online guessing about a man's sexuality,
mm-hmm.
but it does not feel like he was on Tinder.
Okay.
For one.
You don't want to speculate, but yeah.
I don't want to speculate.
He's getting his Christian tingles elsewhere, you're saying. Yeah.
Watching him on the show, it's kind of devastating.
Oh, it's like awkward. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's strange. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't feel bad for, you know, a man existing in the Mormon universe who's married this woman, but I don't know. The patriarchy, whatever. I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Also, so throughout the series, he has more looks than his wife. Mm-hmm. Literally different hairdos, different outfits.
Diana Ross level.
He's giving Housewives level.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like he is unrecognizable scene to scene. And I'm like, maybe that, and people are speculating that's so that he wouldn't be recognized while he's on whatever app he's on. But now I'm like, well, you've been put on this show. So now you can't do that without fear of someone talking about what you're doing on an app publicly, right?
Yeah, right.
So he's essentially trapped now. Mm. And I feel like that was Whitney's sort of game for this. You know, now you're trapped. Now you can't do whatever you were doing in private before because people will expose it because now you're on TV.
Oh, well, that sounds gruesome.
Yeah, I feel bad for him.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it does also sound compulsively watchable. You kind of are making me want to tune in.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to keep watching it.
I think you more successfully sold this to me than I sold Beetlejuice to you.
It's kind of fantastic.
Is it Bravo?
No, it's Hulu.
Oh.
It jumps right in.
All right. Mormons, I grew up with a couple of Mormons. When there's like six Mormon siblings in a family, they are always utterly identical. I don't know how Mormons do that. Is it? I don't want to speculate. I'll go ahead and speculate. Is it incest? Go ahead. I'm kidding.
Family dick?
Yeah, I would love to know.
Also, the woman Whitney I was talking about with the husband, there was scandal last year because her baby was in the ICU. And she did a TikTok dance in the NICU with her baby.
Help me, God.
So these
people look on my face is so sad.
Want to be famous. Yeah. Desperately.
I lost control of my limbs. I feel like I... I can't believe I have to even react to that.
And specifically, you know, those dances where someone's dancing and they're pointing and like the captions come up on the screen because they're answering questions. Those insane TikTok dances. She's doing that over her baby who's resting there in ICU.
Brigham Young doesn't want that. Joseph Smith said no.
This was a fake ass keep it. I want everybody to watch this show.
Yeah. Okay. I'm joining right in. And I'm joining the Tabernacle Choir.
Thank you to Miss Pat for joining us. Thank you to our listeners who are still listening to this
episode.
Maybe
the bravest people we've ever met. Yeah.
We'll see you next week.
And maybe I'll have an Emmy.
Yeah. And if not an Emmy, maybe a special guest.
Okay.
Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.
You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Chris Lord, and our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Vertel, and Kendra James.
Our digital team is Megan Patzel, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Evan Sutton. Thank you to Matt DeGroat, David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.